Welcome to part two in the interview with scientists Nicole Beck and Jason Drew, who work in the field and at the drawing table on water quality solutions for Tahoe. In this interview segment, Beck and Drew emphasize how maintenance and operations of existing water quality tools and infrastructure is critical to advancing toward water quality goals. They also share insight into the challenges inherent in securing funding for operations and maintenance.
So we talked about the shift that's happened at the basin scale, at the policy level, but there's also, I think, two other important shifts that have happened. One is that how we define a project. In the past, we've really sort of attacked water quality with infrastructure improvements, and we've done a substantial amount of improvements in terms of infrastructure. But shifting forward, we need to think about projects in different ways, as Nicole mentioned, management and operations of those facilities, as well as other facilities, roads, bike trails, parking lots, other impervious coverage like roofs, decks, sidewalks, pathways. So that's an important one. And the other shift is also thinking about how we move away from in the past where jurisdictions would say, I'm going to take care of my right of way, and every individual private property owner is going to take care of their own individual parcel, and the Forest Service and other federal agencies are going to take care of their parcels. There's this very parcel-by-parcel right-of-way approach, and we need to shift away from that to what we've been talking about for almost a decade, which is this idea of a watershed approach. And that goes back to what we talked about earlier in terms of really focusing on hydrological processes, because that makes sense. Water flows downhill.
Sounds like you're really getting to this point of about connectivity. And I've heard this discussed in some of the regional plan update discussions. Really what it comes down to is the parcel or is the area that's in discussion connected hydrologically to the lake? And Nicole, I know you've spent a great deal of time thinking about this.
Yeah. Connectivity, I think it has a couple of different meanings for me. Personally, and I think there's been some discussion about, well, we don't have to treat catchments that are necessarily not connected. We haven't really defined what that is. Nobody can really definitively, Jason and I, maybe because we think similarly in some respects, might be able to go out, but I don't know that we'd come up with the same answer all the time. So that hasn't really clearly been defined. The concept is there, but the actual definition and determination of connectivity. And I also think that it depends. Mm-hmm. It depends, you know, I mean, hydrologic variability is pretty significant. So large events that transport the, you know, spring season, spring and late winter, early spring seasonal, transport about 70% of the volume here. And in really big winters, everything could be connected, or a large amount of connection. So, and those are bulks, you know, that's a large amount of load delivered to the lake. So again, I think there is some sort of it depends on the strategy, and it depends upon the understanding of what connectivity means. And I'm still not totally clear in my mind. So it's talked about a lot, but yeah. It's still blurry. And I think until we really define what that is, using that as a strategy for where and how we do projects. I mean,
it's really important, because connectivity is not a static term. It's a dynamic term,
yeah.
And it changes with space and time. And that's really important. It could be, you could have an area that's connected in a large event, a large summer thunderstorm that drops, you know, the big raindrops that are coming down really hard for 2 hours, or in a big spring where we have lots of snow, and then all of a sudden we get that winter where it turns from 35, 40 during the day to 75 during the day with 8 feet of snow on the ground.
Yeah.
Versus where we are right now, where we're in late spring and there's no snow.
Yep.
So
basically the connectivity changes under different weather circumstances, and climate change has implications for where areas that are connected at different times of year. I heard just yesterday a great talk about just the diurnal pattern can change connectivity between the, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, freeze and thaw, mm-hmm. that when things are frozen and static in the environment, they're not connected. As soon as you hit a higher temperature, you're opening up potentially huge portions of the watershed that weren't contributing. So that brings up an interesting point, though, in terms of if the term connectivity can be defined in whatever way is all-encompassing, then from within that term, you can make the micro-adjustments that address all of the variability that you just referred to. So where does that conversation happen? The conversation about let's define connectivity and how does it happen? Is it through research? And
it's sort of happening now.
Yeah.
We've developed these tools. It's brought to the forefront that there needs to be some agreement on what connectivity means.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the basin is engaging initially in that conversation right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it does need to be focused. There does need to be agreement.
Yeah. And I mean, again, I think from a prioritization standpoint, we could start with the connected watersheds, meaning they flowed with the, everybody agrees that whatever's running off of that catchment, if it continues, it's going to reach the lake. Start there. That's an easy starting point. Directly connected impervious areas, same thing in a smaller scale type of project. If you can disconnect them effectively, and you can demonstrate that the way that you're disconnecting them is sustainable, it's not something that's just going to clog in a couple of years and we spent money on something that's not effective, then certainly prioritize it there. I think long term, as the prioritization and those kind of hotspot catchments are improved and the load reductions are achieved, and we actually do the maintenance and long-term sustainable load reductions in those, then connectivity, I think, is going to become much more relevant as to how we use that to prioritize. But it is, maybe somewhat of an analogy of a river of 95% boredom and 5% fear. And the 5% of those big events that, happen in the basin, urban runoff and the streams, that's a significant pulse of fine sediment that reaches the lake. That's really hard from a implementation perspective of trying to retain those volumes and infiltrate and reduce it. It's those volumes are going to, a lot more volumes are going to reach the lake. So if the pollutants are controlled and not available for transport, that's a much more kind of safer bet in my mind.
So start with trying to keep the pollutants from entering the system in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, and again, prioritizing places that we know are connected, but
mm-hmm.
and then on a gradation from there. But yeah, there's source control is, I think, extremely effective.
Mm-hmm. Which is, and of course, a whole and entirely other conversation,
mm-hmm.
which I look forward to having with both of you. For today, what thoughts would you like to leave us with in terms of a take-home message?
The most important thing for the Tahoe Basin is we had a lot of questions about what the pollutants of concern were and where they were coming from. I feel like we have pretty good answers to those questions. The next step is answering the how. How do we address that? And I feel like now we're just at the stage where we have the tools that we need to now deploy to figure out the how, which leads to the where and the what. Here's where we're going to do it, and here's what we're going to do to address those issues. So the science is there. It feels like the tools are there. Now we need to start applying this to our decision-making at all levels, basin-wide, jurisdiction, project, and then from there, monitor what happens. And I think we're making a lot more informed decisions now than we were 20 years ago.
Or even 10,
yeah.
It sounds like.
Yeah. I think from my perspective in moving forward, just the infrastructure that is in place too, and seeing what we know just about pollutant generation and transport, maintenance is a huge issue. Maintenance of the existing infrastructure, and that includes roads and all the capital improvement projects. There's a number of them that don't get water, that aren't clean, that aren't functioning. So they aren't providing the water quality benefit that the millions of dollars were spent to provide that. And then in places where it's appropriate, the private BMP implementation of the retention of volumes and strategically doing that in places where it's more beneficial potentially. So that's a significant shift in funding and availability on jurisdictions for maintenance. They, capital improvement projects or resources have been readily available. Now they need money for operations and maintenance. We just saw someone that had a talk that was literally a street road, like a carpet cleaner. I mean, this was a high-end, you know, lick the street clean type of thing, which, you know, it might be excessive, but it would remove some of the fine sediment in places where it matters. But those are totally different funding mechanisms. You know, a lot of the private places that are really impacted are low income. They don't have money. They're put in private BMPs. So how do we get public dollars to those types to solve those solutions?
We've had a shift in the science and a shift in the tools, and now we need a shift at the policy level related to funding, because we need to, we're thinking about projects differently now, and we need to fund projects differently.
Great. Thank you both for taking the time today to talk to
us. Thank you.
This is the end of the two-part interview with Nicole Beck of Second Nature and Jason Drew of Nichols Consulting. Thank you for listening at TahoeProject.org.